back with you here at 96.3 FM. I'm Bathrobe's Pierre Robert Norris, the robe to you. Give me a call here at 427-3772. We got the usual hot topics, plus a few more, lots of interviews. Today in Arcata, people are going to trial for serving free food over the last year. In San Francisco, five were arrested on Saturday at a demonstration in the Mission District when, again, five people, this time five different people, were trying to serve free food. We'll have our three studio guests coming in. And we also have the tumult coming up this next Tuesday, where we're going to have both a youth curfew on a vote at the Board of Supervisors and a proposed grant for money for the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. That's the group that dumped the campers, broke their word, and destroyed the only open-air shelter area in the nation that we know of in order to build, their plan is to build Community House, a 48-person trailer project for $200 to $600 a month. Essentially a million-dollar trailer project that they're looking for money from the City Council tomorrow at 3:30. That's at City Hall, in case you want to show up there. All these things we're going to be talking about and more. You're going to hear a little bit about the Citizens Committee in their own words, the historic meeting where they promised that they would not kick the campers out until they renegotiated if there was a weather problem, or until essentially February. January 1st was the first target date, but since the permits have not been granted for their trailer project, it would have been February that the campers had a right to retain the property, at least to be campers on that property for. This is 200 to 250 people who were displaced, and we're talking people who are now sleeping illegally under the city's anti-homeless sleeping ban, and which you're going to hear extensively discussed again today by several people who are victims of it.
No sooner than January 1st, 10 days after the release of permits. And beyond January 1st, 10 days after the release of permits. Beyond January 1st, 10 days after the release of permits.
That's okay.
We're not going to be displacing anyone. The status quo.
Now, this is may sound to you like it's a broken record, and that's exactly what it is. This is a tape that's made to repeat slices of what was said again and again and again, so you, the listener, can get a sense of the kind of promise that was broken. They essentially said these things once, and we get to hear them three or four times so we can think them over. I apologize for the quality of this tape. We do need some great dubbers and mixers. If any of you have access to that kind of equipment or are better at it, please give me a call at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. In the meantime, my amateur efforts continue.
We're not going to be displacing anyone. The status quo. Earlier than January 1st and after January 1st, earlier than 10 days after permits are released. Earlier than January 1st and after January 1st, earlier than 10 days after permits are released. Earlier than January 1st and after January 1st, earlier than 10 days after permits are released.
If it really gets messy and we get news like we did last year,
And of course, they were moved out on December 12th, although the actual closing of the area in terms of a fence and enforcement of the trespass law there was December 19th. I have no information specifically that camping tickets have been given or that trespass tickets have been issued. But of course, the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, headed by Paul Lee, operating through Paul Merceau and Daryl Darling, called in the big guns, namely Mayor RoboCop Rotkin, who today is featured in the San Jose Mercury News. The January 8th issue of the San Jose Mercury News has Mayor Mike singing some funny lyrics about how kind he is to the homeless and how bigoted all those poor Aptos people are out at New Brighton Beach area for criticizing the New Brighton Beach campers. Which is kind of funny because Mike is the one that has declared that the sleeping ban will continue, that the open-air shelter will remain closed, and if anybody attempts to open another one, it's not going to fly. The police are going to be called in. He said that on this show. He said that on the air, and he also said that over the phone when four campers talked to him by radio about a week ago. So Mike RoboCop Rotkin, or I sometimes call him Motormouth Mike, at the risk of being accused of name-calling, I find that Mike talks a lot but doesn't say much. He talks a mile a minute, but he doesn't get to the basic issue and confront the basic issue, which is, as far as he's concerned, ever since his tenure, and this is his third tenure as mayor, ever since he began his city councilship, he has opposed fundamental rights for the homeless in terms of, for instance, the city's 11 to 8:30 a.m. sleeping ban, which makes it illegal for people to fall asleep outside or in a vehicle. And he was saying exactly the same thing that he said, that he's saying now, back in 1988, when social services were much less than they are now. He has this monotonic line that goes on and on, which is that we are doing more than any other community. In any case, but what you're hearing now in this rather pathetic tape that I'm playing, and I apologize for the quality of it, is a repeat of the November 29th agreement between Daryl Darling, who is the executive director of Community House and an employee of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, and Paul Merceau, who was the head of the Coral Street Open Air Shelter before it was essentially walled off, shut down, and declared a forbidden zone, and the campers of the Save Our Shelters group, who have now since kind of transmogrified into the River Street refugees, and that's a certain number of them. The rest have been either been forced into the armory or hiding under bridges or have left the area or who knows what they're doing. This was an agreement on November 29th that there would be no harassment or eviction of these campers until 10 days after January 1st or 10 days after permits for the trailer project were granted, which will now be in February. Actually, late January perhaps is when the hearing is held, but there'll probably be an appeal on that hearing. Or if there were torrential rains, there would be a renegotiation. No renegotiation occurred. The contract was broken. The news media has avoided this issue like a rotten fish. So nobody knows about it except those who are listening to this show and reading the flyers that I put out. It's also unfortunate that those who are otherwise advocating for the campers, the River Street refugees, namely Brimstone Barb Riverwoman and Sharon Sherry Connable, two very articulate community homeless activists who are not homeless themselves but have been doing a lot of good work helping the River Street refugees, these two have not seen fit to organize around this issue, to bring this issue up to the public much, and I'm not even aware that they're going to be present 3:30 tomorrow at the Community House project. I'm hoping they will, and I encourage them to do so, and of course they are invited to come and speak on this show anytime they want. I tried to reach Sherry Connable this morning and Barb Riverwoman, but to no avail. Let's hear a little more of this choppy tape. You get to hear Daryl Darling say, no sooner than January 1st, and in fact, we will note that on December 19th, he made a wasteland of the open-air shelter. I should say Paul Merceau did, but the two of them together bear responsibility for this, and he supported that decision.
No sooner than January 1st, we'll be moving. We'll review together, as the weather unfolds. We'll review together as the weather unfolds. beyond January 1st, no sooner than 10 days after permits are released. You have our word on that.
I would still.
And that is the broken record that unfortunately is Daryl Darling in this situation. Daryl encouraged the Save Our Shelters group to believe that he would deal with them in good faith on this issue, and met with them four times with city council members present, who also encouraged the illusion that there would be good faith in the issue of the open-air shelter. Now, there's some campers who have said to me, and those are people out of New Brighton Beach, why are you raising this issue again? It's a dead horse. We don't even want to go back to the Coral Street open-air shelter. It's a toxic dump. There's a cement factory on one side and a highway on the other. Well, that's very true, and that criticism was made by other homeless activists years ago about that site. But the fact is, it's the only legal place for people to be at the moment until the city takes some other action. And however much Sherry Connable and Barb Riverwoman and the campers may want the city, and indeed properly request the city to set up some kind of a decent living area like in the Poganip, which was requested a decade ago by Jane Emery, the activist whose hunger strike started the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, I might add. Interesting historical background, which those of you who follow the show have heard me talk about before. That proposal has been going for a decade. Let's have a decent campground, an acre of those hundreds of acres up in the Poganip. But just about, you know, how far do you think that one is going to fly with the city council? Just about how far is that going to fly with the Parks and Rec? I've been sitting on the open-air shelter subcommittee of city council throughout the fall, and so has Sherry Connable. And Barbara Riverman has been in touch with that, too. And I can tell you, it ain't going nowhere. What we've got here is a group of campers, about 30 or 40 of them, who have finally banded together to help each other, and I applaud that, and who've gotten support from the community, and I applaud that, and have gotten publicity in the media for the stupidities of the politicians, and I applaud that, though I must point out to you that folk singer Mike Rotkin is singing another tune in today's San Jose Mercury News, showing what a plucky, folksy kind of guy he is. And I think we're going to have a little alternate lyrics to some of Mike's tunes in future shows. He's really the sweetest kind of mayor you ever met, and all those bigots out in Aptos, you know, aha, to heck with them. But what we really got, of course, is really institutionalized, sleazy, double-talking bigotry at City Hall. Citizens Committee for the Homeless tries to blame the city for closing the property. City throws it back to Citizens Committee for the Homeless. But the bottom line, and the closing of the only open-air shelter in the city, and I'm not saying it's a wonderful place to be, it was a possible place to be, it was a legal place to be, it is no longer a legal place to be. The responsibility for that lies in Mayor Mike Rotkin's hands. Once the Citizens Committee for the Homeless broke its deal, Rotkin could have spoken against it. Instead, he moved right in as the tough cop to either kick everybody off the land and then come in with his wonderful face-saving plan to dump people in Brighton Beach for thousands of dollars, when that money could, of course, served three or four or five times that number, right next to the Homeless Community Resource Center, right next to that the open-air shelter. I mean, one can consider eminent domain. My goodness, what's going on over here? My guests have arrived in the studio, and it's enough babbling from Robert here, or from Bathrobes Pier, as I refer to myself. We have two guests today. One of them, an old-timer, a troublemaker from way back, a best in the business, Becky Johnson, who is a commentator and former host on Community Perspectives, a community television show. Becky, belly up to the mic and say hi.
Hello, Santa Cruz. This is Becky Johnson.
And also in the studio, we have the the newcomer, as I scramble with my notes, no
you're,
way.
You're so organized,
I am,
Robert.
Suzanne Sunshine Luma, the activist witch of Santa Cruz. Say hi.
Oh, hi, Santa Cruz. How you doing this morning?
And we've got witches, we've got commentators, we've got me, as usual, here at the mics, and we hopefully we'll have you. And if you've been trying to call in, we've been ignoring the phone, but we're not going to ignore it anymore. So you call in, you get on the air. Even Al gets on the air. And that's a little in-joke there, folks. But yes, everybody gets on the air. And in fact, we have a call coming in. Ye gods. Hi there, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Is this Bathrobe Bob Norris?
It is. Is this Backburner Bob Campbell?
It is.
Wow.
Two things that you mentioned earlier in your program today.
Uh-huh.
I have one question about the curfew at the Board of Supervisors meeting.
Uh-huh.
When is that?
Okay, the curfew is at 7:30 at on the fifth floor of the county building at on January 9th. Yes, next Tuesday. You actually, you probably would have, I don't know who was mentioned in the Saturday Sentinel, which had a lengthy article on the curfew, but in fact, that is the case. I talked to three supervisors' aides last week.
7:30.
And it is at 7:30. We're a little concerned. Can you hear us on the air up there, by the way?
Can I what?
Can you hear us on the air?
Yes.
You can?
I can't.
Oh, okay.
Called. I can hear you.
Oh, this is a bummer. We're having trouble hearing. I can hear you, but our guests can't hear you.
Oh, really?
So I'm going to have to... I'm going to put the phone between the three of us so we can all listen to you. So talk real loud. let me see here. Yeah, we're having a little bit of technical difficulties. You know,
more professionalism here at Radio Free Santa Cruz.
Can you hear our guests?
What's that?
You probably can't hear our guests either.
No, I could hear them when I was listening to the radio, but I can't hear them now.
What you might want to do is turn the radio on a little bit. In fact, what I would ask you to do is give us a call back in 5 minutes, when we will definitely tinker with the equipment and try to get you on the air so they can hear you and you can hear them.
Ooh, okay. Give me more tinkering.
So that's Battling Bob Campbell. No, not Battling Bob Campbell. Bob LaMonica. I'm getting all these names confused. That's Backburner Bob Campbell. And Bob is has been a long time, at least a decade-long observer of the situation for poor and homeless people in Santa Cruz. He's worked with social service programs. He actually ran the River Street Mini Shelter back in 1990, and supportive outreach services and Pioneer House as well. And I have had my run-ins with him. And since then, however, he's been doing a lot of yeoman's research work around the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. And hopefully he'll be calling us back shortly, and I'll be fixing the equipment. Until I do, however, I intend to let you hear a little something that will kind of fill in the space. Becky, actually, you had some announcements you wanted to make, and maybe we should begin with that. Yeah. It's always a trial when you're doing the makeshift rag here in the mornings. Let's go ahead.
Maybe you should have had an extra cup of coffee there, Bob.
I think I'm ahead, yeah, something like that.
Clear out those cobwebs.
Well, here comes a little cover time. This should interest you, our audience. It has to do with homeless rights.
Well, let's return then to questions you probably do know something about. Any cases in court in terms of civil rights that might be of interest in terms, for example, of downtown businesses discriminating against individuals that have come to your attention? We actually had the Velvet Venom Awards yesterday on the sidewalk. I don't know if I mentioned that to you.
No,
you
didn't.
The Velvet Venom Award was for the most bigoted business of 1995.
Boy, there were a lot of contenders.
There were a number of contenders. The ID Building, the Java House, Food Court.
Indeed, the Velvet Venom Awards, and we actually discussed that at the last show, and we are reprising that, and we are still tallying up the Velvet Venom Awards. But I would like to say to anyone who wants to call in, we have fixed the technical difficulties, so at least we'll be able to hear, all of us in the studio, any callers that call in. You see, we have three of us, we have one phone line, we have a pretty makeshift board here, but we are back ready to receive any phone calls. And I guess before we do, let me also point out that Becky Johnson is not only a local programmer, a community activist, a welfare queen, as she sometimes calls herself, in jest, that is to say, an AFDC recipient who's stereotyped unmercifully, but she is also a member of the board of the very same Citizens Committee for the Homeless that I was speaking of earlier, the group that has evicted campers from the River Street Shelter, and recently had a board meeting in which she is really one of the few people to oppose. Well, she brought up the issue of an open-air shelter. Tell us a little bit about what happened there, Becky, in terms of your proposal.
Well, as you recall, since you were there, Robert, at the meeting earlier on, an announcement was made that there would be absolutely no discussion whatsoever about postponing Community House or anything to do with the River Street site. And I took their message to heart. I felt that that was a stone wall and that we should proceed with the next direction, which is to find a new site for an open-air shelter, as I prefer to call it. I know there's a little controversy about whether to call it a campground or an open-air shelter. They both have their points of view.
Let me clarify this for a minute, Becky. In other words, as I understood, you initially came to that meeting with the idea of asking some serious questions as to why the open-air shelter was so precipitously closed in violation of apparent agreements between Paul Meursault and Daryl Darling.
When I came to the meeting, I was under a false impression. I had been advised by someone who should know that
Chairman of the board, perhaps?
Perhaps. Who had said that the city had closed it.
Paul Lee, chairman of the board?
That could well be. And that the city had closed it down. So when I came into the board meeting, I did not think it was an option at all for CCH to reopen the shelter. Much to my surprise, as the meeting progressed, Paul Meursault stood up and told the CCH members that the decision to close the campground had been his and Mike Rotkin's alone, possibly with Scott Kennedy's aiding and abetting.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And
Kevin Kennedy we're talking about here.
And okay. At that point, I do not know if there were any other board members. I'm sure Daryl Darling must have known, but one can only assume. But for the vast majority of CCH members, that was the first we had heard of who had made the decision to close the campground down.
Now, isn't that a little naive, Becky? I mean, everybody reads the newspapers around here, and the campground was in the newspapers. The closing of the campground was in the newspapers. The deal that the Citizens Committee for the Homeless made, to some extent, was also in the papers, although the papers, as I said, have not really covered the very specific and important point that this campground was supposed to remain open until 10 days after January 1st or 10 days after Community House permits were granted. Those are the trailers that are supposed to supplant mm-hmm. the campground and are still up in the air. They were scheduled for permit hearings on January 25th or 26th. And that would mean, at this point, that not until February would campers and people who need to use that field have to move. The only exception to this, as you heard from the rather scratchy tape, and I'm going to play again in a better taped version, is if there were such torrential rains over such a long period of time that it made the field uninhabitable. Now, campers agreed, and I think you were out there with the camera crew. Was that field
Absolutely.
Uninhabitable or not?
Oh, 2 days after the storm, it was not uninhabitable. There was no standing water left. The campers had dug trenches. They'd gotten a pump and pumped out standing water. The tents that remained had all been winterized. They were up on pallets and secured. I mean, the fact that 35 tents came through that wild storm, that proves something. It proves that it is possible to have outdoor living at a campground year-round. I mean, that was probably maybe a 10-year storm.
So 10 days after the illegal, I have to say illegal, because I believe these two men, Meursault and Darling, who were the authorized, were they not negotiating agents of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless?
They had been at the previous meeting.
In November.
Yes. Paul Meursault and Daryl Darling had requested to act as agents for CCH regarding the campground so that they could make decisions on a daily basis. That was approved by CCH in November. I did understand that the agreement with the campers was to have the field open until 10 days after the permits were issued. And I was under the understanding that the very soonest that the campers would have to leave would be January 10th, and probably later than that.
And what about in the case of inclement weather?
Well, they said that if we, in the case of inclement weather, that the CCH would meet with the campers and they would renegotiate.
And did that renegotiation ever recur, to your knowledge? Did that happen?
My understanding, there was no negotiation with the campers whatsoever. Paul Marceau and Mike Rotkin came and met with the campers and told them that the campground was closed and that was it, and you know, that to get used to it, and that if they chose to stay on the site, they would be arrested.
You know, it kind of brings back to mind the way I was thinking in November. In November, you may remember, those of you listening, and you, Becky, that we were doing petitions downtown. We Save Our Shelter was marching about and did a demonstration. We came to City Council with 1,200 signatures. We talked to Daryl Darling and Paul Marceau, actually Daryl Darling, in four different talks at the San Lorenzo Park Duck Pond with City Council members present. And at the last Duck Pond meeting, Darling didn't even show up. And then we moved from negotiation to protest. And he then very indignantly showed up several days later and told the campers the quotes that you heard earlier in the hour, that we will no sooner than January 1st, we'll be moving 10 days after that date, and or whenever the permits are granted 10 days after that date, if it's later, and we'll renegotiate if there's a weather problem. He said that, along with Paul Marceau, on November 29th, one day after the large demonstration, 2 days before the Citizens Committee for the Homeless's 10th anniversary celebration. Now, I read that as an attempt to forestall protest against CCH and also to forestall protest against merchants downtown who are entering the business season, the Christmas holiday season. How would you have read that, Becky?
I think that the downtown merchants were very concerned about if they closed the campground early and the campers moving down and disrupting those final Christmas shopping days. I feel certain that was a factor in the decision to create the New Brighton option for campers.
Which happened a month later, but I think also a factor in the decision to not close the campground on December 3rd, as they had been saying they would do when the armory opened.
I think that's a fairly obvious factor in these negotiations.
And what I saw at that time was, and the campers, many of them were telling me, oh, let's not alarm CCH. They're doing such wonderful things for us. They're going to negotiate with us. They're giving us what we want. And, of course, Barbara Riverwoman, who had essentially called together the Duck Pond meetings, which we can see went nowhere and were essentially a violation, you know, where we set the campers up for the betrayal of December 12th. That was actually the date that the campground was announced to be closed, even though the actual fencing off didn't happen until the 19th. It was the 19th. Even at that time, I urged the campers to make sure that the Citizens Committee for the Homeless Board specifically granted them, very particularly, the deal that the two negotiators, Daryl Darling and Paul Marceau, had promised them, namely 10 days after January 1st or 10 days after permits, which would go into February, unless there's inclement weather and then renegotiation. They did not. You may remember at that board meeting there was virtually no discussion. Paul Lee quickly, he was the chairman of the board, quickly moved that issue through and simply gave the campers, simply gave the two men, Marceau and Daryl Darling, negotiating power, but did not commit the board to any particular position. Do you remember that?
That's exactly how it occurred.
And the campers who were listening to this actually were kind of concerned, particularly a man named Dragon's Heart Dan Hopkins, who I call Dragon's Heart. His name is Dan Hopkins. He stood up and made a speech, actually was allowed to make a speech somewhat later in which he expressed the concerns of the campers. But there was Lee very cleverly, in my opinion, maneuvered it so that the board did not commit itself to the rights of the campers, but merely committed itself to any deals made by Paul Marceau and Daryl Darling.
He put the power to negotiate that into their hands.
And therefore, what happened was, the irony is, of course, that having put that power into their hands, the board did not even want to hear what had happened, how they had been betrayed by these two men, how the campers had been betrayed, and I believe the board as well. But here's an incoming call. Hi, you're on Free Radio Santa Cruz.
Hi,
Bob Campbell. Here.
Bob Campbell, you're back again. I think we're doing...
Give another try.
All right, and say something again. Say hello, Bob.
Hello, Bob.
We can hear you, Bob.
Yay, Bob.
Have you been
Bob.
Following this tedious recitation of what's been going on?
No, I just got the last couple of minutes here is it Barbara?
Becky.
Becky, right.
Mm-hmm.
Was speaking.
I'm also going to invite... Suzanne to speak here as well, because she's kind of been hovering in the wings, or very patiently checking out the scene. Suzanne, do you want to say anything about this before we go ahead with Bob?
Bring Bob on, and then I'll be glad to share.
Okay.
Yeah, bring Bob on. I'll be glad to share.
I think she wants you, Bob. Go ahead.
I'm afraid that I personally don't have that information, although theoretically I have access to it.
Actually, Bob, I have the documents that went to the City Council back in December and are going to be reappearing at tomorrow's 3:30 City Council meeting, which talk about the reprogramming of community block development grant funds for the Community House Transitional Housing Project. And I can read you what the recommendation is. Regarding community health, the recommendation is that reprogramming monies from the CDBG program year 1995-96 program budget in the following amounts. So there's $7,000 for Beach Flats, $10,000 for El Rio, $9,000 for the revolving fund for small... Here we go. $9,108 from program income available for allocation from city CBG rental income. That's actually not concerned with CDBG, sorry about that, folks. But $22,500 is from current balance available for reprogramming in the revolving fund for small business assistance to the following activity. Community House Transitional Housing Project, $49,284, and to transferring funds and amending the 1995-96 budget in the amount of $49,284. Now, for a community house. Now, further, it says a request has been received by the Santa Cruz Citizens Committee for the Homeless to reprogram available funds to the Community House Transitional Housing Project. At the meeting of November 21st, 1995, the council initiated proceedings to consider the request at a public hearing. This activity has a 1995-96 program year grant of $25,000 for pre-development project costs.
Wait a minute, $25,000 for 95-96?
Yes.
Okay.
Which has not yet been expended. The funds presently available for reprogramming come from the following categories. Unused public facility grants, which has to do with $7,000 from Beach Flats, $10,000 from El Rio, $9,000 from program income, and revolving funds, $22,500. Expenditure of CDBG funds for this purpose is appropriate in order to complete a current CDBG public facility project, which is currently listed as a priority in the city's consolidated five-year plan. Okay, let me take a look here. Here is a proposal from Daryl Darling, who is the director of Community House, and it's dated October 11th, 1995. We wish to request that the undistributed allocations of CDBG funds for the current year be reallocated. We understand the total of such funds is approximately $65,000. We own the property to 111 Coral Street, been seeking means by which housing for the lowest income population could be established for approximately 45 persons. With diminishing resources available in the public sector, rejection of our application through HUD this year, we are very much encouraged by the opportunity provided by Stanford University to relocate approximately a dozen double-wide modular homes, which have been residents for graduate students for several years. The units are a quite serviceable improvement over the church floors, armory, and tents.
Does it say anything about, operating funds that will be needed on an ongoing basis?
I'm looking. And we intend by mid-October to apply for the required permits. Actually, they applied in November or December, I believe. I could be wrong about that. Taking approximately 6 weeks, want to complete the relocation early in 96, taking approximately 6 weeks for any necessary restoration of units with the assistance of Habitat for Humanity and other volunteer resources. The projected development budget and operating budget are predicated on full funding, but we are prepared to also rely on a substantial amount of the labor and services to be donated. We are confident the project is economically feasible and viable in every other respect with development resources already allocated by the city, plus the additional $65,000 that request, plus approximately $85,000 that we intend to raise from other sources by June 30th, 1996. That's the end of the letter of October 10th. Then there's a mission statement, projected schedule, a projected residential profile, and then there's a development project budget schedule. Maybe that's what you're looking for.
Yeah.
The grants. HUD, John Hines approved, $25,000.
Okay, go ahead.
1996, I guess maybe it wasn't approved. 1996, because this is dated 6-1, so maybe they wanted it to be approved, but it wasn't. Then 1996 through 2000 at $100,000 a year, $400,000 they're expecting.
$100,000?
Yes, that's what it says, $100,000.
From who?
Presumably HUD. It's right under the HUD section.
Uh-huh.
CDBG 1995 allocations unexpended. They're looking for $15,000 on this June budget schedule. Sponsor donation, $87,490 from CCH fundraising. Equity syndication, CCH land, $315,000. CDBG 95-96 approved,
$25,000.
CDBG 95-96 approved, $25,000. The claimant's approved. Stanford University contractor, $20,000. And FESG, which I suppose is Federal Emergency Shelter Grant or something, $50,000, total $937,490, and minus the land, the total is $622,490. I hope all you people out there have been keeping your pencils at the sharp. I expect there's going to be a quiz on this in about 5 minutes.
Well,
yeah, I guess what I should do...
You were the manager of Westside Health Clinic, is that
yes.
The Westside Community Health Clinic?
Right.
For about a year, and then I guess it did it go under? What was the story with that?
We ended up merging with Planned Parenthood in order to kind of continue to provide services to the population that was on with Westside's mission.
Mm-hmm.
In August of 95, the board minutes of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless regarding Community House outlines a similar budget, but says that the ongoing operating funds of community health on a year-to-year annual basis will be between $280,000 and $330,000 a year, and that about $180,000 of that is going to be coming in from rentals, which leaves anywhere from $100,000 to $150,000 that needs to come in additional to that. Now, so it just doesn't seem like much of a viable project at this point from the standpoint of the financial stability of the Citizens Committee itself, and also just from the city's ability to finance the project.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm interested. I think you have a board member from the Citizens Committee for the Homeless.
Yes, we do. Becky, do you have any thoughts on this budget? Is this the first time you've seen it? What's your feeling about it?
No, this is not the first time I've seen this. And as with many projects that are there to serve a portion of the community that is in need, there's always the danger that funds that are brought in, both government funds and privately donated funds, sort of get siphoned off in the process by through administration and staff salaries and everything, so that very little actually filters down to the end users. And
it's interesting because
I'm looking at the budget here now. It says that like their projected costs for personnel, which includes $28,300 for a program director's salary.
Could that be Daryl Darling?
I'm not sure who that is. That's probably either Daryl or Paul Marceau, I assume. But the total personnel budget is $177,596. Is that per year? Is that my understanding?
I would assume so, yeah.
Yeah. For salaries, that's $177,596 that is not going to the people who the project was intended to serve.
And I would say it's probably four or five times as much as would go for the open air shelter. I'm not sure but it's certainly at least twice as much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the operating costs on a campground to provide porta potties, to provide sanitation, to provide garbage cleanup, and some regular monitoring are very minimal costs, probably kind of the lowest cost per capita for people served. We have organizations, say, up in San Lorenzo Valley, the Valley Churches United, Annette Markham's group. She operates her program. The money that comes in, they only use 3% for overhead, and 97% goes on to the people for which those programs are intended. It's really hard to do as well as Annette Markham has done. And
it's
all
volunteer staff, that's why.
Well, and she probably donates 60 hours a week herself personally at no cost. But it seems that these numbers do seem high to me in terms of administrative costs, and that we should be doing a better job at CCH at making sure that these funds get to the people for whom they're supposed to serve, and not enrich staff and administrators.
Well, let's talk turkey about what's going to be happening tomorrow. Tomorrow, there's actually going to be a decision by the City Council on the use of $25,000 to $35,000 of these unused funds for last year.
Well, it's funny, I hear $49,284, and then I hear $25,000.
I'm a little confused too.
Allocation that they're asking for will be, but what I'm bringing up here isn't so much that the Citizens Committee shouldn't get the funding. What I'm bringing up here is that perhaps there's if this is going to come about, perhaps the Citizens Committee needs more assistance than they're getting. Not financial assistance, but just kind of, some expertise in how to kind of manage this project through the long term. How feasible is it? for this to happen. You know, I was reading over the board minute notes back in August of 94 where they actually had to give pre-development money back to Red Cross because they couldn't come up with matching funds from any place. And, you know, I can understand why I can't. I mean, that's difficult to accept given the, you know, the opportunities are only going to present themselves if the project is feasible. Perhaps the city council should be looking at what is the feasibility of this project and as a whole, and can it actually get funded? You know, I mean, if they're talking about a budget that has HUD money in it, when HUD has already denied the project, it just doesn't register as something that makes any sense to me.
Yeah, I think, what do you think about that, Becky?
Oh, I wasn't aware that HUD had denied the project.
I think they, yeah, that says accepted on that June schedule, but if you go back to the first few pages, you'll see that HUD has denied it.
October 11th, 95.
Yeah, October 11th, it's been denied. I guess my concern has always been, you know, I got nothing against transitional housing, you know, I'm not trying to cut that out.
Well, my effort is to kind of try to look at the transitional housing piece as a piece of itself, and then the whole idea of the campground and how feasible of a project is that. I mean, maybe the city council would be willing to sort of hold that money and decide, well, what's the most feasible project.
Well, you know, that's something you brought up at the Citizens Committee's board meeting in December about 2 weeks ago. And I guess Becky and I were both there. You proposed, you asked the question, I thought very well, very pertinently, that could the Citizens Committee, even if it's going to do this community house project building, could it, at least until the time it gets its permits, which are going to be at least a month, allow another group to run an open-air shelter there if they were paid and so forth, if they were supervised, because somebody like Karen Gillette has suggested, at least in March, if you know there is a site available, she would at least bring a proposal.